Hello, everyone. We're back. Common Sense Revisited. This is your host, Clyde Cleveland, and we have our special guest, Michael McKay, on with us today. Michael, I did introduce you as one of the leading Austrian economists in the world. Recently attending an economic summit in Turkey. And let's start with that question. I get that a lot. I know you get that a lot. We just got it in the last hour. What do we replace? There's nobody listening to this show that doesn't want to get rid of the Federal Reserve. What do we replace it with, and what do we need to be concerned about in replacing what we have now?
Well, first of all, I'd like to address that one very generous, maybe overly generous comment that you made about me. I would say that there are hundreds of scholars that I would put way in front of me as being, quote-unquote, leading Austrian economists. One of the many I would actually point to would be Professor Thomas Woods at the Mises Institute. He's written an excellent book that I would like to plug very liberally here called Meltdown. And it is a free market look at why the stock market collapsed, the economy tanked, government bailouts will make things worse. Okay. It's an excellent book that outlines not only the causes that have of this current economic crisis, but it is probably the best synopsis of Austrian economics, which I would like to just call common sense economics or reality economics. Because it basically presents the real underlying causes of why we are in this circumstance that we are, and it also shows a very clear roadmap of how we can get out of it. Specifically to that comment about fiat money and so on, I would like to actually start with a quote from Gary North, and this actually is a wonderful quote. Betting against gold is the same as betting on governments. He who bets on governments and government money bets against 6,000 years of recorded human history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great quote. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And and also in the last show, I want to get your comment on this. In the last hour, we had Don Rasmussen on, and Don was talking about Panama and how in Panama now people are free to use any currency they want. First of all, there's no central bank there, and the people are free to use anyone. And he said the prosperity is just amazing, and it's really becoming a great financial center because of this, and creating a lot of opportunity and prosperity and freedom for the people there. What do you have to say about that?
Well, without commenting about Panama specifically, I would say that the concept of competing currencies is very good. It is not actually the same thing as sound money, as having sound money. But what it does is it can lead to sounder money because of the fact that people have choices. It's
right.
Very instructive to note right now that in Zimbabwe, which has, admittedly the worst hyperinflation in the world, where they actually post expiration dates on their currency. They're only good for so many months at a time. The only way that the economy functions is because it has an active black market. And that active black market functions based on U.S. dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, the question becomes, what happens when, if due to legal tender laws, the fiat money blows up, throughout the entire world, well, what are people going to be able to use? Now, so competing money actually is a very good thing because people will automatically start using a money that is actually more usable to them. History has recorded that the very best money that you can ever have is gold or silver, and ultimately some kind of reference to gold most likely is going to happen or going to have to happen. In the future,
right, and so this is basically the free market, isn't it? This is how nature works. When you leave people alone, they tend to choose something that has real value, and that the thing that has real value that's most used is throughout history has been either silver or gold.
Yeah, well, I like to think of economics in two different directions. One is in the direction of how we manage things, the management system. So
right.
The classic discussion or definition of economics as the study of the allocation of scarce resources is a very, very valuable, extremely valuable definition. But I like to include a second definition, which actually is the study of how people choose to cooperate with others in harmony or not. Because it isn't just the allocation of stuff, it's how we choose to do it. And the view of looking at human interaction as an ecology, as something that is really very natural, is a spontaneous order to things. I mean, anybody who's ever been in a crowded parking lot or any kind of situation where they're in a stadium at a ball game or whatever, there's a spontaneous order to things. And in human ecology, the spontaneous order is really based on this choice of whether we choose to operate with each other in harmony or not. And you can actually map the entire what is called a free market solution to things in terms of personal property rights, sound money, long-term horizons, which is another way of saying putting savings first, as being in complete alignment with this concept of cooperating with others in harmony. Now, the or not part of the equation, that particular line of thinking is what I call the path of conflict, is a direct result of the choice of not choosing to operate in harmony with each other.
Right.
You know, because you have either you have non-ethics or relative ethics, if you will, where it's right or wrong, good or bad, because at the moment I say so, or it happens to be legal or not. There's desire of power over others. There's short-term horizons, which directly relates to the consumer / Keynesian mentality, which,
right.
by the way, I define Keynesian economics as shop until you drop economics.
Right, right. It's really it's all about credit. And just continual borrowing for the future, and letting a future generation pay for everything.
Right. Well, and Tom Woods, in his book, he actually has a really beautiful little section on the Keynes fantasy, and the Keynes fantasy is based on the presumption that we can have a permanent boom. And a friend of ours recently, you may remember, Clyde, we got into a conversation that is yet to be completed with a friend of ours who was talking about the natural cycles in
right.
the world. And there are natural cycles in the world. And but just like the ocean has natural waves, there are outside or outsized, if you will, events like a tidal wave. And
right.
those are caused by some disruptive kind of activity or
right.
event, like an earthquake or whatever. Similarly, the natural cycles that can happen in businesses are normal, but it's not likely that all businessmen make the same mistake at the same time.
Right.
I mean, what causes a bust? And the beauty of Austrian economics, and I want to plug a lot of books because I'm a big believer in people reading books, that you really need to continue your education. I have another word on that because somebody came back at me recently on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the books that really is fundamentally important for people to read is Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt.
Okay.
And so
Economics, your connection is not as clear as I would like. Economics in One Lesson.
Right.
By Hazlitt.
By Henry Hazlitt.
Henry Hazlitt. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Meltdown was written by who?
Thomas Woods.
Thomas Woods. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then both of our favorites that I know you're going to mention is Whatever Happened to Penny Candy.
Right.
Whatever Happened to Penny Candy.
By Richard Mayberry.
Richard Mayberry.
Mm-hmm.
And if people would read those three books, I think they'd get a pretty good idea then of the essence of Austrian economics, which is, as you said, it's really just laws of nature. It's just what people do. It's reality economics that our founders understood, that Cicero understood, that a lot of the Greek philosophers understood, that studied laws of nature, because that's all Austrian economics really is studying what people do when they interact in a natural way. And I just wanted to take this in a little bit different direction. Our founders understood, and I think Mayberry does a good job of explaining this too, that in his in some of his other books, that they understood the two fundamental laws. Number one, everyone is to do what they've agreed to do. In other words, follow your agreements, honor your agreements, and fulfill what you've agreed to do. Number two is to never encroach upon the rights or the properties or the property of others. And if we can create an economy, and what our founders understood the government to be, the purpose of the government to do, is just to enforce those two rules, those two laws. And then basically, as long as people are following through on their agreements and they're not stealing or encroaching on the rights or property of others, they're free to do what they want. And that concept, that government, which was created, 233 years ago, when our Declaration of Independence was signed, really was when it was created, created the freest, most prosperous, most greatest opportunity for upward mobility of any nation in the entire planet, the history of our planet. We'll talk more about that as soon as we get back from this break. Don't go away.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Don't be a victim of sudden cardiac arrest due to inflammation of the arterial walls. Our hemp foods are anti-inflammatory and gluten-free and can greatly benefit the health of the human body. By calling 908-691-2608 or visiting hempusa.org, you can benefit from this wonderful natural food source. Our customers are also purchasing this natural food for long-term storage, camping, survival, and emergency food rations. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org today. Hempusa.org believes that now is the time to plan for the future, and food will be your greatest asset. People spend money on all kinds of things, but our warning is prepare now for food shortages in the future. So don't delay. Call today, 908-691-2608. And see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? When he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-656-4806. 1-800-656-4806. Call now. 1-800-656-4806.
Hey, we're back again with Michael McKay, one of 50 Austrian economists who were invited to Turkey recently for a summit there. And Michael corrected me when I said that he was not one of the leading Austrian economists in the world. But I will tell you this, he knows as much as anybody I've ever met. And one of the things I think that Michael does have a gift for is making this all pretty darn simple for anyone to understand. So we're very honored to have Michael with us today. And Michael, we've got our first caller.
Okay.
We have Mark in Texas. Mark, would you like to ask your question now?
I was just running around thinking that maybe, you know, when we came up with the national banks, and we know the big one that's located in North Carolina, If that didn't attribute to some of the problems we're seeing with the states, and what I'm trying to equate that to is like with the Walmart. You know, it comes in these small towns, and just through purchasing, it sucks a lot of the money out, and the only way new money can be put into play as far as currency in that town is going to be through borrowing with interest, and over a period of time, I think we know what happens then. But in California, when you have a national bank, didn't a lot of the money probably get sucked out and sent possibly to North Carolina, and then the other part of their problems was magnified when, let's say, Wells Fargo was doing massive amounts of currency transfers from the Mexican workers down to Mexico. Didn't that not possibly magnify the problem?
Good question. Michael?
Well, I don't know how to really...
That's what I'm thinking, too.
I don't really know how to address this properly, but you touch on a number of points. One of the interesting things that I think is very important for people to understand as a principle, and this may address part of your question, is that when money is injected into the economy, it does not come into the economy like peanut butter across bread. It is poured into the economy or injected into the economy more like, and Mayberry uses this analogy, like pitchers of molasses that are being poured into certain either geographical areas or into certain economic sectors. And from there, it actually spreads its way out into the economy. Now, it takes a little time for that new money to actually create, to actually make its way throughout the economy. But sure as the day comes, every time new money is poured into the economy, the value of each existing unit of money becomes less. And so that is a principle that we should be very aware of. So whenever you see this bailout money and it's coming into a particular company, for example, or a particular sector in general, those particular companies, those particular sectors will be the first beneficiaries of that new money creation. They get to use it while its purchasing power is best. But as soon as that money starts to circulate throughout the economy, then at that point, the purchasing power of everybody else's money starts to become less and less and less. And guess who is the person that loses the most? The elderly.
If you have an adequate level of currency floating within a region, the government or the state makes money off of exchanges through taxation. But if you have a shortage of currency floating through a region due to it being, you know, taken away through a national banking system to the point that there is a shortage, then naturally the tax rate would go down because there's not enough money circulating and changing hands that's there right now, you know, not even to be injected down the road, you know, to see the possibilities. But at that point, you have to have an adequate amount of currency. You see where I'm going?
Well, there's a basic principle about money. Over a certain level, any amount of money that is in circulation is sufficient. You do not need to consistently add money into circulation in order to make an economy work. In fact, this is one of the stronger cases to support sound money, commodity-based money, gold, silver, because at that particular point, there becomes an actual limit to the amount of money that's in circulation. But equally as important, and maybe even more important, is the elimination of fractional reserve banking. Because fractional reserve banking creates a artificial expansion of the money supply.
Through unnatural leveraging.
Through unnatural leveraging. I like to use the analogy that, fractional reserve banking is, when people suddenly understand how it works, is like 10 men surprised that they're all married to the same woman. You know, it just doesn't work. And ultimately, it is going to cause a collapse. And the interesting thing is that various different schemes of money can last for a very long time. The economy does have a tremendous amount of resilience. We've already noticed this with the fiat money that we've been operating under for the last, officially for the last 38 years since 1971, when it's been totally fiat money. There has been no reference really to any gold or silver. But while it can operate for decades, it can't operate indefinitely. How long can it operate? That's really the big question.
Well, my son brought home a new penny. Have you seen the 2009 pennies yet?
Not yet.
I'll wait till you pick one up. It feels like it's made out of tinfoil. I'm not kidding.
Unbelievable.
Enjoy your show, folks.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks so much for calling. And we're going to another break here. And we have a long segment after this break. So stay with us. Don't go away. We're with Michael McKay. And we have a lot more to say. See you later.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
You invest, you buy insurance, you wear your seatbelt, you do things to ensure your family's future and protection. But why? Just in case? With the current state of affairs, ask yourself, am I ready? Preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com. SurvivalGearSource.com has a huge selection of vital products, emergency survival kits, gas masks, MREs, communication devices, products for pet care, your car, home, office, and school. Protect against all natural disasters and terror attacks that can happen at any time. If you are not prepared, the last place you want to be is standing in FEMA lines. Invest in your future now. Visit SurvivalGearSource.com or call 877-231-1925. That's 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. That's SurvivalGearSource.com. Or call 877-231-1925. 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. Prepare for tomorrow now.
Hi, this is Tom DeWeese, inviting you to join us for the 10th annual Freedom 21 National Conference in Oklahoma City, August 13th to 15th. Our keynote speaker is G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. You will also meet Chuck Baldwin, Gun Owners of America President Larry Pratt, a host of state legislators hot on the heels of the fight to preserve state sovereignty. And you will learn all the details behind the coming international ID and how the MEAC report fits in. Property rights, privacy rights, education, and the assault on natural health care, all will be discussed at Freedom 21. And John Stadmiller of RBN will be helping me co-host the event. You can register for the full conference or for just a day. We also offer a very special student rate. For more information, go to www.freedom21.org or call my office at 540-341-8915. The leaders in the fight to preserve our freedom are gathering in Oklahoma City this summer. I hope you'll join us at the Freedom 21 National Conference.
All right, everybody, we're back with Common Sense Revisited. I'm the host, Clyde Cleveland, and we have a very special guest today, Michael McKay. By the way, I want to mention to everyone, before we get back, Michael, to you, just that I want to tell everybody about your show, which will be starting next week. Michael will be taking the second hour from 1 to 2, and I'll be having the first hour, as usual, from 12 to 1. I'm going to continue with my interviews of candidates, Liberty candidates around the country. Michael is going to take on our favorite topic every week, and it's going to be the topic that somehow we need more government to regulate the economy because freedom has not worked in this country, and we need more government to fix the problems. And that is what they try to tell us, and all of you that are listening know this propaganda. You've heard it, and Michael is fantastic at explaining why that is not the case, why it is not that freedom hasn't worked. It's why it's exactly the opposite. Freedom hasn't worked because we haven't had it for about 100 years. We haven't had a true free market. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the basic theme of Michael's show every week. And it's, you know, no one is better that I know of to explain this than Michael. So, Michael, we got a couple of calls. And I'll just tell the callers, please, we got a lot of calls coming in now. Which is a good sign, Michael. Everybody really wants to hear what you have to say. So I'd like the callers to please just keep their questions as concise as possible. Let Michael answer them, and then we'll get on to the other questions. Let's first of all take, I think it's George in Texas is next. George, are you there?
How you doing?
Great, George. How you doing today?
Well, you know, the thing is, I was sitting there reading, and I looked at it a little bit before, the king started really taxing the colonies. We had what we called a colonial script. It was fiat money, but there was really no intrinsic, precious metals backing it. But it was a very successful thing because there was a productive capacity to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the same thing with Texas. I guess you're declaring independence, and it's just the same thing with Texas. Texas can come up with its own paper currency that would just be enough for commerce.
George, thank you very much for that call, and it's one of Michael and my favorite topics to talk about, so I'll let Michael take it from here. Thanks for calling, though. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, you know, this is an important topic. The conversation of whether or not there is a way to make fiat money work, I think at the center point of the sound money conversation, this has to be discussed, and we have to get some very important points out there. I would say the number one thing that people that promote fiat money as a possible way to run an economy or to work with to establish money in an economy is that fiat money is a primary tool used by politicians for war. This particular point is very rarely even discussed, but it is the number one reason or the number one thing that occurred in World War I at the end of the 30-plus year span of worldwide gold standard, where all of the belligerents, which were basically the majority of the major economies in the world, went off the gold standard at the same time. Now, why do they do that? Because in a fiat money environment, politicians can actually spend money they don't have. And you can go back in actual history and you can debate this period here, use some fiat money, and it worked out okay. I can come back and say, well, you know, look at the Continental, look at the Assignat, look at the last 90 years where we have a 95% depreciation of our money based on it being basically fiat money. But the essential point that we have to come back to is that we're going to have to trust politicians if we're going to go back to some form of fiat money. And I always like to ask this question. How's that working out for you?
It's not well for me.
No. I don't think it's working out very well for just about anybody.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem, George, and others. We hear this from the fiat crowd that there's a lot of very sincere people that Michael and I both know who are intelligent people who believe that we should definitely get rid of the Federal Reserve. They see the problem there. They see the corruption. They see the problem with this private group, private cartel of central bankers controlling the currency. But they think it'll be fine if we have a fiat currency and let the government run it. And I can't agree with that, because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what is there going to be to stop those politicians, 10 years, 20 years from now, and abusing that privilege, using that money to expand government in areas that it shouldn't be in, and get us into wars? The people have to have sound money, and it can't be a money that the politicians can inflate at their will. It gives them too much power. You do not want to have that power in the hands of politicians. It's got to stay in the hands of the people. And the only way that you can do that is with some kind of sound money, gold and silver, so that they are limited in their power.
I'm going to continue to recommend a number of books as we go along, Clyde.
Yes, go ahead, Mike.
And there's an excellent book by Murray Rothbard, and it's available to read free online at Mises.org, which, by the way, I want to recommend this site head and shoulders above any other. It is the absolute best source of education in economics and in history also, I would say. And the name of the book is What Has Government Done to Our Money? And that is by Murray Rothbard, and you can read that online at the Mises.org site. It is an excellent book that explains this particular answer very completely.
Let's do this. Let's review here. That was Mises.org, Mises.org.
Mm-hmm.
What Has Government Done to Our Money,
right,
by Murray Rothbard. And Michael had me read that last year, and it was a fantastic read. We also, for those who have just joined us, have recommended Meltdown, mm-hmm, by Thomas Woods,
mm-hmm,
a current book, right?
Current, and actually it was on the New York Times bestseller list. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay, excellent.
Yep.
And then
it has a foreword by Ron Paul.
Oh, okay. Forward, mm-hmm, by Ron Paul. That's Meltdown by Thomas Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And then Economics in One Lesson,
mm-hmm,
by Henry Hazlitt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Whatever Happened to Penny Candy by Richard Mayberry.
Yep.
And I recommend all of Richard Mayberry's books to everybody. At the end of Common Sense Revisited, which is my book, commonsenserevisited.com, the first books I recommend are the Richard Mayberry books. Those are available at Blue Stocking Press. That's bluestockingpress.com. We have another caller here.
Okay.
From, I believe it's Pennsylvania. Oh, my screen just went out on me here. Patrick in Pennsylvania. Patrick, are you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Oh, Patrick, please ask your question, and thanks for joining us today on 4th of July.
Hello, Michael. It's Pat, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Okay.
First of all, congratulations on landing your one-hour weekly radio show. I'll try to tune in on the Internet and listen to it. You mentioned Michael has a lot of wonderful quotes, and I think an apt quote about how far we should trust politicians to run our money is a quote from Mark Twain, in which he said, "Although I consider myself the most reasonable of men, it would not be wise to grant me unlimited power." And when we grant anyone the power to print money, we are essentially granting them the power to play God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing good's going to come of that. But my comment to all of you is that I think one of the previous callers seemed to have a problem with understanding money and what money really is. And he talked about, well, there's a deficiency of money. And I think that it's hard for many of us to understand that we have dollars in our wallets, and we can walk to go anywhere, and it's just a certain amount of those that we can pull out of our wallet or write a check against a balance in the bank, and we can purchase a world of wonderful goods and services. And it's hard for us to realize that this money is really not worth anything. It's an artificial thing. And the essential basis of money is in indirect exchange. And indirect exchange means that there is some commodity that is most acceptable to market participants. And all fiat money has a history in commodity money. It's impossible to have a fiat money that just arises out of nowhere. It must have some basis so that people have some rough idea of historical worth of this money. But it gets corrupted over time. And another comment I think, you know, is that you should understand is that money is really purchasing power. People have to get their minds around this. And what generates purchasing power is production.
Mm-hmm.
When we produce something, we exchange it for money, the money is just the wonderful device by man that converts whatever the specialty is that we produced, whether it be a good or a service. It gives us purchasing power to go buy millions upon millions of other goods and services. We don't have to, if we want an apple, we don't have to go to an apple grower and say, Mr. Apple Grower, would you like to have my tax services so I can buy some apples, for example. We sell our tax services
right.
for money, and we buy the apples. And
yep, does. It facilitates the exchange of goods and services so that we can have fluid economy and a much more efficient exchange of goods and services. Michael, do you have any comments?
Well, the first comment is that I want Pat on my show before you get him, Clyde.
Very good comments, Pat.
And I think I'm going to arrange that. I think that there's two conversations that, and thank you, Pat, for your wonderful elucidation. There's two conversations that I think we can have. There's a primary conversation that we are all having, and that is, what do we do on the governmental level? And this is, to many of us, much more obvious. We should abolish the Fed. We should return to sound money. We need smaller government. Privatization of government services is one step. You know, all of these are steps we can talk about. But I think that a lot of listeners are really more interested in what do we do on the me level. And in order to get to the me level, the people level of this particular issue of how do we make a conversion from a rather corrupt economy model to a more organically sustainable, if you will, workable ecology of economy, I think there's a few points that we need to talk about. The first point we need to talk about is some basic education of what people need to deal with. And I'd like to segue into this, unless Pat or you, Clyde, have another comment that you'd like to bring up.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the first thing I'd like to bring out is that there are three things that people need to understand that you can do with money. If you get a pile of dough, there's only three things that you can do with it. You can consume it, you can save it, or you can put it into production, what I like to call create for yourself a money machine. Now, we have an economy right now that is unsustainable. Why is it unsustainable? Because we have 70% consumption. In other words, 70% of our economy is based on consumption. We're consuming more than we're producing. And there was a wonderful little book review by a wonderful gentleman by the name of David Gordon on this book, Meltdown, that came out serendipitously yesterday. And I'd like to read to you this one little point here that he says, about Austrian economic cycle theory, and then we can go from there. The basics of Austrian cycle theory fall readily into place once one considers a fundamental point. The economy can grow only by producing more goods. An expansion of the money supply does not suffice. Efforts to get something for nothing by the government's deficit spending or by the expansion of the money supply cannot produce lasting prosperity. Now, in other words, for us as a just normal people, what do we do? What does that mean to us in our in the translation of our life? I will give you my rendition of the translation. Number one, keep your job. Don't lose your job. Become more valuable to your employer. If you are an employer, then and you produce something, you have a little business or a big business, make your make the people that employ you, your customers, more happy. And if you can do that, you're going to generate a whole different dynamic for yourself. Now, as a society, it's hard to force everybody to adopt a different way of looking at things. But I like to use these three little initials, C, P, and S, you know, consuming, producing, and savings. And if you write them down, C, P, and S, we all have PhDs in the C part, in the consuming part. We need to get PhDs in the savings part of the equation, because savings is the foundation of production. And if we can get into that kind of mindset, then we can start to build, not only for ourselves, but for our entire ecology, we can create a sound economy that can last.
Yeah.
Second, I would say that we have to realize this acronym that Mayberry outlines called TANSTOFL, or there ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Right.
And I like to translate that into somebody always pays. And this ties directly to that recommendation of that book by Henry Hazlitt of Economics in One Lesson. We have to start to look consistently for who is actually paying, who others are paying for these bailouts, who others are paying for this inflation of the money supply. It's either others or us later, our kids, our grandkids, but it's somebody is always going to pay. Third, I would say we have to engage in active education. And one of the problems I ran into recently, I mentioned this earlier, is that somebody said, well, I just don't read books. And my comment to that is that's like saying that you're going to go on a trip, but you're going to refuse to put gas in your car after the third or 12th gas station.
Or you're going to not take a map and map out where you're going.
Right. You may be able to coast for a while, but you're not going to get very far. And
hey,
so
Michael,
knowledge base is important.
We have a break here, and Michael,
okay.
And we have Yuri from Wisconsin waiting to ask a question.
Excellent.
Okay, so we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
They say 50 is the new 40. I like that idea. But it won't change the facts about prostate health. At my age, you have to understand what the prostate affects. Urine flow, intimacy, sleeping habits, overall quality of life. So if you're like me and you want to give your body nutritional support for a healthy prostate, then take what I take. All natural beta prostate. Now, many men try Saw Palmetto. But Beta Prostate has hundreds of times more healthy plant sterols. In Europe, doctors prescribe plant sterols for prostate support, but here you can get them in non-prescription Beta Prostate. This is targeted nutrition, and it works with your body. So why wouldn't you take this amazing nutrient? Here's a number you can call to try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 800-362-5848. Your satisfaction is guaranteed or you get your money back. 800-362-5848. That's 800-362-5848.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Hello, and welcome back to Common Sense Revisited, our final segment for today. And we have a caller, Michael, from Wisconsin, Yuri in Wisconsin. Yuri, are you still there?
Hello.
Hello, Yuri. Yes, go ahead. You're live.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Yes.
Well, I just came back from the Independence Day parade and found this wonderful introduction to economics, the sound economics civics lesson on this radio. And I would like to congratulate you, gentlemen, for this wonderful program. I'm teaching economics, and I think that these basics, which are so obvious for those who love freedom, are kind of clouded for many others. And I would like to ask Mr. McKay, what does he think we should do for our personal independence from this intrusive government through the printing money that there is no tomorrow? And what can we do? Because the great Austrian economist von Mises, he said we are all historians of decline. Does he think that we are witnessing this decline, or we have some hope in the future?
Well, thank you for that wonderful question, Yuri.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's hard not to be discouraged. I mean, when you see the press cooperating with the power seekers and the privilege seekers in enabling the confusion of the masses, it becomes very discouraging. But there's an old saying, where there's breath, there's hope. And we owe it not only to ourselves, but to our children, to do whatever we can to actually promote sanity and basically promote freedom. I mean, if you look back in the history of the world, freedom is a relatively new phenomenon. And as one person recently pointed out, we really better preserve it in the United States, because if we don't, it may very well collapse worldwide for a period of time. But just like concrete can't hold back the grass from growing through it eventually, all the lies and oppression will eventually be overcome. It's a question of when. It's also a question of whether we want to make it happen. And I believe strongly in the power of education. And I thank you for being a college professor in economics and a lover of freedom. And I think that if people take the attitude that they can do something, and that something is to educate themselves, that they're not going to just try to coast, but they're going to do the hard work of looking at reality and saying what is really going on. Because as Thomas Sowell likes to say, reality is not optional. And as one other great quote was, you can argue with reality, but you'll lose about 100% of the time. And so I am optimistic long term. I'm optimistic because of the number of young people that may be listening to this. I'm particularly optimistic because of the internet. I like to point out that 50 years or so before Martin Luther put his 95 theses on the church door, Gutenberg invented the movable press, and it was because of the movable press that Luther's thoughts started to circulate throughout Europe. And it is because of the internet that these ideas are really unstoppable. And as many people that can pass them on and get them into your daily conversation, challenge definitions. Don't let people just say capitalism is bad. Well, say, well, what are you talking about when you're saying capitalism? You know, what we really ought to be doing is digging in deeper and understanding what we're talking about.
That's great, Mike. Great thoughts. And thank you, Yuri, for your question. And it's a very good, enlightening, and uplifting message for everyone on this 4th of July. We can win. Indigenous power will never die. And as long as we realize that the surrogate power is only an illusion. Thank you so much for joining us today. And come back next week and join me and Mike.
With recent international flights.